with the shelter in.
Uh-oh, where'd she go?
Yep, I'm still here. So by way of testing, so far in the months of March and April that we have admitted and tested 438 patients. Of those 438 individuals, 379 tested negative and 49 individuals tested positive. So we are pretty representative of the County of Riverside in that it's running at, we're running at about an 11% positive rate. Right now, we currently have 10 positive COVID patients in-house, and we have been very stable for the last 5 weeks in that area of, you know, we'll go down to 8, we might go up to 13 or 14, but we're staying in a pretty tight range. And I do want to make you aware that there have been a number of guidances provided for resuming deferred health care. So our primary focus right now has been working on all of the protocols that are being set by the California Department of Health Services, the county, CDC, the governing authorities. The American College of Surgeons has provided guidance on resuming some surgical work. So we do anticipate that we will start onboarding procedures and care that has been deferred up to this point in time, and that we do have the capability and to meet all of the guidelines that have been provided in order to be allowed to do so. So that is really our number one priority that is before us. We were one of the first facilities to participate in the convalescent plasma infusion protocol. We did participate in the IRB as governed by Mayo Clinic, and I will tell you on the side, a couple of individuals, they are doing well. So our physician leaders are very pleased with the way that particular protocol is working. And then lastly, I wanted to share with you that we're doing well on the PPE front. We have greater than a 30-day supply on hand in all PPE areas, the masks, the gowns, the face shields, the gloves. I don't remember if I let you know last time, but we were having some supply chain disruption in isolation gowns. So we did invest in the reusable cloth gowns. Those are gowns that you can send out for laundering and sterilization. And so that it seems to be by far preferred by the staff. And so we did make that decision. We've had two stocking orders, and we have a third order that is arriving today that should make us very self-sufficient for the future on our isolation gowns. And so if you have any questions.
President DeLauro, Director Schur has his hand raised. President DeLauro?
May I speak?
Yeah, we lost the president, so Karen, can you?
Michelle, I have two questions, if you don't mind. Would you mind, in light of your comments, which are very positive, and I'm glad to hear that, can you comment at all about that, which is coming out in the newspaper about allegations of inappropriate levels of supply, number one, and number two, on a much more important level, the overall financial impact to hospitals is being reported nationally as very severe in terms of the loss of revenue for all the obvious reasons. Can you comment a little bit about the overall impact to the financial operational issues of finance related to the hospital and the newspaper, please?
Well, I will share with you with the volume numbers that I indicated at the beginning of my report. It does have its economic toll, and we've made significant investments in the preparation for for surge. The surge didn't occur to the degree that was originally anticipated, and I think we are all extremely fortunate for that. So I would just characterize as what you're reading is pretty realistic when it comes to how this this pandemic has impacted hospitals across the nation. I cannot tell you that what you are reading in the Desert Sun is accurate. It is, in my opinion, an extreme distortion. We have had adequate and PPE since day one. I don't think we have ever gone below 7-day supply of anything. And even when I tell you that we don't have as many disposable isolation gowns as I would like, we still have 8,000 disposable isolation gowns. So it took us by surprise when we read the article as well.
Thank you very much for the clarification. I think that was very important for the record. I appreciate that.
And then President DeLara is trying to get her connection back, but the next hand was Vice President Borja, but you lowered your hand. Are you?
Not at the moment.
So then the next comment is Director Rogers.
Thank you. A couple things. One of them is that, you know, I have an anecdotal report that there's a problem with N95 face masks that nurses get one per shift, which I know is the recommendation, but that their problem is that they're getting them when they're soiled, getting an additional one when they're soiled. But I understand that the nurses have a problem. The other thing that I'm concerned about is unfinished business has to do with the family practice residency program that was going to be substituted by a tenant residency, family practice residency program, and I was wondering if that's still on schedule for July 1.
So the residency program is still on schedule for July 1. It is the end of this month and a couple of days when the Regional Review Board confirms the Desert Regional program accreditation. So that is still moving forward and is still on track. I know of absolutely no nurse who has been asked to work with a soil mask. We replace the mask. We have the mask on the unit. We have both locked and unlocked masks, and we have daily rounding on every unit where the individuals are asked if they have adequate PPE. I do not have a single incident report from an employee that says that they have been asked to work without appropriate PPE or soiled. I have a number of reviews that have been completed by Cal OSHA as well as the Department of Health, which has found us fully compliant with PPE protocols. So I would absolutely encourage any individual that is telling you anything that is inconsistent with what I'm saying is that they absolutely need to be reporting to myself, to the chief nursing officer, to our head of infection control, any physician, whomever, because I've noticed that the paper likes to say people fear retaliation. Well, whoever they are comfortable within the institution that can real-time correct the issue should be sought.
Thank you.
President DeLara.
I can't remember if you had a third question. I think you did.
No, I do.
Director Perezio had her hand raised first. Director Schumer, please.
No problem.
Michelle, I have a question regarding the nurses being understaffed. A couple of
We have been in ratio the entire time. There's a waiver that says you can go out of ratio, but we have not found it necessary with the particularly with the light light census levels, we have access to plenty of staff.
So everybody has an adequate count per nurse of patients, or are they working with more than the normal?
So no, the state of California has nursing ratios, and we have been in compliance with the state of California nursing ratios, which is the, you know, the daily, our daily operating guidance.
Okay, thank you.
Director Shore?
Now, if there is a nurse that feels that she's not being staffed appropriately, there is a mechanism where they can file, and I'm drawing a blank on the name, but there is a process for an individual to report in if they feel that the ratio on the unit isn't appropriate for that shift or that event to be evaluated.
Yeah, but the problem with that
is we have flexed a lot of staff off, and we have some staff on furlough. Well, but again, with the drop of 50-60% of your volume, there are a lot of individuals who are not getting their usual work schedule or work hours.
Yes, I'm hearing from the from a couple of nurses that they feel overwhelmed and that they're afraid of speaking up because of the same thing that was in the newspaper, the retaliation. So I'll let them know to contact somebody, I guess.
Well, they can file through their union. So there's a process in that regard. I mean, there's a number of means to escalate, both within hospital management and within organized labor.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Director Shore?
Michelle, one quick question. Have any of our caregivers who were negative tested positive as a result of taking care of patients in our responsibility and your responsibility?
So we've had approximately 3 look-backs. It's called a look-back when you have concern that someone may have had an exposure. So we've had 3 different look-back events, and I'm going to talk off the top of my memory banks as I cue things. I'm going to say that there were approximately 100 different individuals that were tested as part of that look-back process. And none came back positive from a negative.
Thank you. Finding. Thank you very much. Thank you.
We have had some employees we've quarantined. We've had some residents that we've quarantined for a variety of different reasons, but we've had none that have tested positive.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't know who else has spoken, but I'll go ahead and ask Director Matthews. Do you have any questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay. Director Zendel, do you have any questions?
No, I don't.
Okay. And Vice President Borja?
I don't.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the next item, COVID-19 updates, starting with the FQHCs. I'll turn it over to our CEO to introduce the appropriate people in his order.
Thank you, President Lara. We have a few updates on the COVID-19 related activities or funding that we have allocated. The first one is related to the federally qualified health centers. The 3 FQHCs have received their grant and their check: Borrego Health Foundation, Desert AIDS Project, and Clínicas de Salud del Pueblo. These were core operation support that we granted to them. And our goal with that is to ensure that we have a workforce and healthcare infrastructure in place to continue serving the underserved. The second item, which is related to this grant, is the expansion of the COVID-19 testing sites. And we have Dr. Foltz on the line who can provide a brief update of what the 3 FQHCs are doing.
Dr. Foltz, you need to provide your phone number so I can unmute you, because you did not log in with a number, a name, if you're still there.
I think Dr. Foltz had to leave to another meeting, if I'm reading his comments correctly.
Would you like me to read his comments, President?
Yes, Director Zendel, please do so.
Yeah, okay, he posted this at 4:43. Hello, this is Dr. Christopher Foltz from Desert AIDS Project. I was to provide a brief update regarding COVID testing at the FQHCs, but I do not have the ability to speak, only to listen. We received the first round of antibody tests, a total of 2,500 last week, and began an internal validation to make sure the tests work accurately. This should be completed by Friday of this week. We have a meeting that day where we will finalize our public testing protocol and hopefully able to roll it out in a very broad scale the following Monday. Unfortunately, I also have to be at another meeting currently. If you have any questions, please complete them and send them to cfaults@desertaidsproject.org and I will reply.
Okay, very good.
So I would like to add to that that the medical directors at the three sites, the three FQHCs, are working together on this, and that we expect to have six sites next week where we will be able to offer COVID-19 testing, and we will be doing both PCR and antibody testings.
Okay. I'm gonna ask the directors if they have any questions, starting with Director Matthews.
I do not, thank you.
Director Rogers.
I just wonder if the funding that we have provided, if it's adequate to meet the need.
Director Rogers, I believe that it was adequate at the moment that we did it. We are, number one, this is a trial. We want to make sure that we're using the right tools and we want to see what is the result of this. I believe that if we find that there will be additional resources needed, the staff will bring that up to the attention of the board at the following meeting.
Thank you. Okay.
Director Perez-Gill?
I don't have any questions at this time.
Director Shore?
No, thank you.
Director Zendel?
I kind of want to add a little bit to what Dr. Barsica just said. I think that one, they need to see if using the antibody test for diagnosis, the way Dr. Foltz presented last time, and he and I have had several chats about it, theoretically, it should be helpful in making a diagnosis, but it's not really being used that way other places. And I think they need to see if it works, if it's helpful in diagnosing that somebody who happens to come in at the right time, an antibody test might be positive. In terms of using the antibody test to see if people have had past infections, there is a tremendous demand out there. People think they had something in February and they want to know whether it was COVID-19. In fact, several private doctors' offices are making a lot of money offering the test for $250, and we're not even sure whether the tests are valid, what their sensitivity and specificity are. You'll read later on in Dr. Kaiser's report, and I'll say something about that later, is he mentions about the antibody test and the problems with it. So I think that what we spent is enough for now. It may not be enough in the future, depending on how useful it is, and also depending on how much the county and the state decide they want to invest in surveillance testing to see who may have had the virus, to see what the real prevalence of the virus in the community is, et cetera, et cetera. So I would answer the question that Director Rogers asked by saying, it's enough for now.
Okay. Director, Vice President Borja?
I don't have any questions or comments. Okay.
I do want to make a comment that I want to thank Director Zendel for his article in the Desert Sun earlier this week to help us help the community better understand about testing. So thank you for doing that. Okay, CEO.
Thank you, President.
Excuse me, President Lara, we do have a hand raised. There are some public comments.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Mary Rado, and we also have Karina Velasquez on the line.
Okay, let me look at the public comments. I'm sorry for, thank you, Andrea, for bringing that to my attention. So I have to look at the hands, right?
So Gary Grotto's hand is raised, one of the attendees.
Gary, can you go ahead, please proceed?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair and board members. Just want to add to the report and say that we will be doing a walkthrough this Thursday morning with our team, our operations team, over at the 29 Palms site, and that we anticipate that if all goes well, both with the walkthrough as well as the validation testing that Dr. Zendel mentioned, that Dr. Foltz had written about, that we'll be starting up next week and be operating on Fridays and Saturdays from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. We're avoiding the heat of the day, of course, because we're going to have our staff out there, our physicians and others in full PPE. And so it makes sense to try to do it earlier in the day and see if we can set the appointments in that way. And we'll see how it goes after a couple of weeks of trial to see how we adjust to continue to work on behalf of the community.
Okay, Andrea, who's next?
There aren't any other hand raised. I wasn't sure if Karina wanted to make a comment, but Gary may have.
Okay. Is there any other public comments at this time on this item before we move on? Okay, moving on, Conrado.
Thank you. The next item is a brief update on the Find Food Bank Ending Hunger Today, Tomorrow, and for Lifetime activities. And Donna, can you please provide just a brief update on that?
Sure. It's in your packet on page 56 and 57. I'd ask Debbie Espinoza to do a quick update on where we're at since the funding was approved for the start of April 1st. And you can see that they're well over the percentage of what they were going to be doing for the grant, which is a year-long grant. But how they've stepped up to the plate, they've increased their mobile sites, their distribution sites. They're doing door-to-door delivery as well, working with in senior housing. And so all in all, as a disaster relief organization, they've had the infrastructure in place to be able to just step in and jump in without any kind of hiccups, and I'm very proud that the district and the board, I'm very proud that the board and over the years has funded and invested in Find Food Bank. Debbie Espinoza, CEO, is on as a participant if anybody has any questions regarding her update and report.
Okay, Director Matthews, do you have any questions at this time?
I do not, thank you.
Director Rogers?
I was just wondering if the grant that we awarded is going to be able to meet the needs of the community coming with the increased participation of individuals in requiring food from the food bank.
I would say she's on track, and I think yes, she is meeting the needs. Feeding America has also stepped up to the plate and is providing emergency funding and food as well. So they've got Feeding America's got a huge plan on how they are helping the food banks and food pantries. But Debbie, I don't know if you wanted to add anything to that.
Is she on the line? I don't see her name unless
she might be on a phone number.
You know the number by chance? Is it a 760 number?
Let me see.
The only reason I ask is that we did a drive-by St. Elizabeth's in Desert Hot Springs, and people are in their cars waiting in line for food this morning, and the line went totally around the block, all four around the block, and even out onto the Main Street Palm Drive, and people asking for requesting food from the food bank.
She indicated in the chat that she was on.
But what is her number, though? What is her number? She dialed
760-775-3663.
Andrea, she's not on a phone number. She's on as Debbie Espinoza.
Thanks, Jenna.
You're welcome.
I don't see her in alphabetical order at all. There she is. Thank you. But we do. We also have some, once she's done, President DeLauro, some board members have questions.
Okay, thank you.
Did you want Debbie to answer Carol's question?
Yes. Debbie?
She's unmuted.
She needs to unmute.
I unmuted her, so she needs to unmute herself.
She unmuted yourself. Myself unmuted. Okay, all right, hold on. Okay, I've got her on speakerphone, so.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, Donna, can you mute your speakers on your computer? Let me try to do this without.
She just needs to unmute.
I know what's going on. Hold on. What? Okay, can everybody hear me now?
Yes.
So I can't hear you because I had to mute my line, but you can hear me. So let me explain to you what's going on. Yes, we are in the process of being able to meet the current needs. We have. The amount of increase has been so extreme, and you can tell by the numbers in my report, that we're at about 125,000 from our initial about 90,000 on average every month. So when I look at my March of 2019 numbers served, we're at 89,750. We're going to hit about 125,000 by the end of April. For just the month of April. We are now at about 2.7 million pounds in 45 days, and we're able to keep up with it. But what we're finding is happening is that typically the food bank will be at about a 100,000 pound surplus during this time of the year, getting us ready for the summertime, for when we go more distribution out than income of food in. So we're, you know, getting ready for the summertime during this time. At this point in time, the amount of food that we're bringing in, which is a higher amount, is almost equivalent to the amount of food that's going out. So we're at a net zero right now. So it's definitely extreme. As for meeting the needs, so far we haven't had to turn anybody away empty from any of our global market distribution sites. Our agencies are being able to keep up with the flow. We are at a point now where we're at about 25 to 35 pounds of food being distributed at each one of the distributions, down a little bit from our typical 45 pounds. But it's okay. You know, we're increasing the rate of distributions where we're at every other week or every week as opposed to once a month. So it was bound to happen that way. It's important for us to keep the rate of distributions up right now in order to make sure that clients don't get scared, that there isn't something that's going to be coming. But, we have more supplies of food that are coming in. There's TFAP and USDA that are going to be bulking up right around the July or August time, so it's just a matter of managing the food flow. The produce is absolutely helpful. Many of you know right now, the backup in the food stream is in, like, the canned items, the shelf-stable goods, because they have to go through the packaging and the processing in order to get it into that form. But the produce, you know, they pick it from the field, they send it on the trucks, they get there. So the produce has been in good supply. And, you know, like Donna was saying earlier, you know, this is what this community has worked for over the years of investing money into a regional food banking system. It's for these moments in time that when you have a strong regional food bank, we can react and we can move very quickly and actually take advantage of a lot of the things that are being offered out right now into the community because because our infrastructure was already in place and has been in place for years, including the methodology of distributing fresh produce into the community. You know, so our warehouse operations, while they're extremely different than what they were before, what isn't extremely different is actual processing of the produce through the warehouse, which we have to turn and move within a 1 to 2 day period of time in order to make sure that it doesn't go bad and it gets into the hands of the community. So are there any other questions?
Okay, I'll move on to the next person. That's Director Perez Gil.
Vice President Borja had her hand.
I'll go down my list. Director Perez Gil?
I don't have any questions at this time.
Thank you. Director Shore?
No questions. Thank you.
Okay. Director Zendel?
No questions, but I just want to say what a good job Fine Food Bank is doing. It's really getting a lot of attention and it's being noticed all over, and I'm glad the healthcare district is participating and supporting. And several people have asked me if they were going to donate money to sort of help the community deal with COVID-19, who should they donate to? And I always tell them Fine Food Banks and the homeless shelters. Those are the places that individuals can really donate and make a difference.
Thank you. Vice President Borja.
Yes, good evening, Debbie. Thank you so much for your report. And also thank you and to all of your staff, your board members, for giving so much in this time of need, and just honestly for being prepared and having a plan for times like this. I heard from you at the program committee right before the board voted for the allocation of this money. At the program committee, you had shared with us that these $400,000 were going to allow you to levy other funds for the Eastern Coachella Valley. Has that been possible for you to do with kind of like everything that's going on, the more work on your plate? Like, have these funds helped bring in other funds, as you had mentioned earlier to us?
So yes, they have. We haven't used, it's very interesting right now with the fundraising climate. I think the leveraging has come into play in the sense that because we've been set up for a long period of time with regards to being the regional food bank with the DHCD investments in over the years, it wasn't so much about this specific grant. So we got to look at it holistically. It was this grant combined with the investments that were made over the years that people have the faith and trust that the food bank has the capability of being able to do what you guys are seeing the food bank doing today. So the leveraging has come off of that, and the equitable food distribution that we talked about with regards to the Eastern Coachella Valley receiving just as much produce as the Western Coachella Valley, because we have strong funding on one side to be able to put the food bank into position to request funding for the other side. That's what's happened. And as we move forward into, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months, 6 months out past this time, when maybe fundraising slows down just a tiny bit, that's when we really start pushing the Desert Healthcare District grant that the West Side has been funded, and we really need to continue to build upon that to keep the rate of produce that's coming into our community being able to be distributed equitably out throughout all of the communities in the Coachella Valley. And with the great funding partner we have on the West, we need to find another one to be able to match that for the East.
Thank you, Debbie. I appreciate the timeline.
You bet.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the next information item. Conrado?
Thank you, President DeLara. The next item is...
Excuse me, Conrado and President DeLara, we have public comment after each and every item, and we have a public comment for this item.
Okay, it was my understanding that we did public comment only on action items. Can we get clarification on that?
Jeff, let me unmute him. I don't think so. I think there's public comment on each and every item. Jeff, can you give us a clarification, please?
I think a better practice is to go ahead on even on informational items.
Okay.
To get input.
Very good. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Andrea. Andrea, can you call on the public by as they're showing their hands?
Yeah, so the hand raised is Sylvia Paz.
Hi again, everybody. I don't think I have a comment on everything, but for this one, I just want to thank the Desert Healthcare District for supporting Find Food Bank and Find Food Bank for doing the great work that they're doing. There was a question earlier about, is there enough for the need? And, you know, you all are the experts to answer that question. But we recently partnered with Find Food Bank, and it's been great to do like home deliveries. Find Food Bank was great in allowing this partnership to happen. Alianza with a team of volunteers goes, picks up food, and then we deliver it to mobile home units. Door to door, we're working with 14 mobile home units. That's about 180 units, close to 800 people. And I know that as the reason why we felt this was needed was because many people who are still considered essential workers, which are farm workers, to the extent that they're still working, they're taking probably the only vehicle that's available to work. And we have an elder population that cannot get out in a safe manner to the food distribution. So when we talked to Debbie about this, she was more than, you know, open to guide us through how to do this, both in terms of like how the Find Food Bank program works, as well as guiding our volunteers on safety practices, and we developed a plan to do this. Now there, I mentioned we're working with 14 mobile home parks. We're adding about two more in this next round of deliveries, but there's about a total of 123 mobile home parks in the East Coachella Valley that are isolated and have a difficult time getting to the food distribution sites. So again, thank you, and thank you for supporting Find Food Bank, and please continue supporting them so we can meet the needs of our community.
Thank you, Sylvia. Andrea?
There are no more public comments at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
The next item, CEO?
Thank you, President Lara. We invited the public health officer at the county, Dr. Kaiser, to participate in this meeting and provide us with an update on what the county is doing to ensure that we're fighting COVID-19 with all the resources that we are required to have. He sent a letter to the board yesterday regretting to be unable to join us at this meeting, but he did provide a written update on the activities of the county. That letter was sent via email to all the board members, and it was also made available to the public. We received that letter at 4:08 yesterday. Therefore, we couldn't include it in the updated board packet, but it was attached and included in what's available to the public.
Okay, thank you. Although Dr. Kaiser is not able to join us, we do have Greg Rodriguez on the phone who volunteered to try to address questions. If we have any questions from any board members, I'll go down the list. Director Matthews.
I don't. I'd love to hear Greg's comments, though.
Very good. Director Rogers.
No, I have no comments, but I would like to hear Greg also.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Greg then, so maybe he will generate some questions. Greg, I'll turn it over to you.
It's so nice for everyone to be heard. So. Dr. Cameron Kaiser did a pretty thorough explanation of what's going on. I just kind of wanted to expand on some of the antibody testing we are actually looking at as far as the county, really more for epidemiological reasons and study information. So we're looking into that. Again, to Les's point, is we want to make sure that we're getting the most accurate tests as well and making sure we can continue the supply chain on that. Additionally, for those of you who may not know, we actually did open a site in Blythe over 4 days last week, and that was very successful. We tested about 700 people over those 4 days. And then going forward, just as far as from the public health stance, they are finalizing a recovery plan based on public health data science, which will mirror a lot what the governor rolled out today as far as the four phases into the economic recovery plan on that. So those are just a couple updates, and happy again, if there's any other questions, happy to answer.
Very good, thank you. Director Perez-Gill, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions at this time.
Director Shore?
No, thank you.
Director Zendel?
I just wanted to thank Dr. Kaiser for the very comprehensive report. I think it was very worthwhile to read about it. You know, there's one of the reasons I'm glad is that there's so much misinformation out there about what the county is doing, what they're not doing, what about things like testing, the whole idea of do we need to keep staying at home, what can be open, why can't things be open, things like that. And I think that although he releases things countywide and the press covers it to some extent, I do think the healthcare district has a role in helping make sure the people in the Coachella Valley understand it and their concerns can be addressed. I was particularly happy that he addressed the issues of nursing homes and long-term care. I personally think there's more to do, but you know what? I'm not an epidemiologist, he is, so I'm gonna defer to him. So again, I really wanna thank him, and I thought it was a really good report, and I hope people read it, and I hope the press picks it up and prints some of it, because a lot of the stuff they put in the newspaper isn't as relevant and detailed as what he's put out, and again, thank you.
Vice President Borja?
Yes, hi. So there has been a lot going on across the Coachella Valley regarding people leaving their homes. The protests that happened on Sunday in Palm Springs. I'm just genuinely curious, what is the county's, what the county feels their obligation is to continue either like stay at home, opening things, opening certain things and not opening others. And also now hearing that different cities in their council meetings are going to be taking up the issue of like starting to open different businesses. Just wondering what the leadership call is from the county as far as public health is concerned. My concerns are for many, but the workers being one of them, lots of people in our community who are essential workers, and then people who are being asked to return to work at places like the golf courses, maybe not given PPE because the county hasn't required that those jobs be given PPE. I'm just like genuinely curious as to what it is that your response is. And it may not be a question for you, Greg, it may be a question for Dr. Kaiser.
Am I still on? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I can answer. That's a great question. Let me, I wanna hit two things I forgot about. I did forget to mention that the state is working on providing a team. This is throughout the state, but we've specifically one team that we're gonna utilize in the county here. And that will be PCR testing. And we're looking, public health is looking at deploying that into Mecathermal Oasis, primarily to target our farm workers. So I just wanted to get that out there because I forgot about that. I wanna pick up on Les, thank you so much. Cause as you know, you're right about the information. People either don't get it right or they don't, or fabricated anyway. So I really appreciate those comments. I want to emphasize too is that we get a lot of comments, how come Riverside County's the second largest numbers of positives in the state? I really want to point out that's because we're testing. Out of the large counties, we are the number one tester in the state. So obviously the more you test, the more results you get. We are at about a 1.7% population testing, which is extremely well. Karen, specifically to your question, I kind of referenced this in the phased approach. We really want to emphasize, and Dr. Kaiser has made this quite clear throughout, and we got a lot of grief in the beginning for this, that all decisions about opening up or changing orders were going to be made purely on the scientific data. With that being said, as I mentioned, and that will be the case going forward, many people might know that on technically the county stay in place order expires on April 30th. We have decided, public health decided in conjunction with the Emergency Operations Center, that we are not going to extend that as far as the county goes. However, we will be reverting to the state stay at home order. And that does not have an expiration date. The only real difference from the county's order was the covering of the faces, the short-term rental issue, and then the school closures, even though the state has pretty much said schools are going to be closed. So for all intents and purposes, what the county has had in place for now will remain. As I mentioned, the governor proposed today four different phases. So the first phase is basically making sure that businesses are prepped and ready to go if they do open. This is having the right PPE equipment, having the right signage, having the spit guards, I hate that word, but for lack of a better word, up around cash registers, making sure there's proper social distancing in their operations. Perfect example, and I'm glad you asked the question, Karen, is when we opened the golf courses, we did that based on guidance from the Golf Association on how to effectively do social distancing, how to provide and protect the employees that were there, and those protections are in place. I will say we have gotten reports that certain people aren't following the rules, and that's to be expected. You know, as you can probably imagine, enforcement mechanism for all 125 golf courses just in the desert here is next to impossible. So we're really trying to encourage communities, and overall the majority of public is doing a good job too. You know, this is a lot about personal responsibility and calling each other out, to be honest with you, and this because it is a public health issue. So that's kind of the first phase. The second phase will be more around limited openings of restaurants, hospitality, some brick and mortar stores, primarily that serve just brick and mortar stores. Again, with you know, curbside pickup, again, social distancing practices, proper PPEs, and all that. The third phase will be what's called like personal care. So that's going to be hair salons, barbershops, spas, nail salons, et cetera. Again, with real best practices, industry approved social distancing. And then the fourth phase will be your larger events. So those will be like concerts. And the third phase would include church services as well, and then movie theaters. And then the fourth phase is your much larger, so conventions and concerts. Now, I will emphasize here that there's no set timeline all this. Again, a lot of it's going to depend, to your point, Karen, on how we feel as public health directors in moving forward to this. And much of that guidance will come from the state and from the governor.
Vice President Borja, do you have any other questions?
Yeah, I mean, the only comment I'll make is that the Golf Association is not a public health entity, right? To the way that you're laying it out for us, right? So I'm not part of the Golf Association, so I'm not sure they have people on there whose particular business is public health in the way that we're talking about it and safety and everything else. Thank you for that update.
Yeah, the only reason I mentioned the Golf Association is basically because they come up with, and they do work with public health officials. A lot of the Restaurants Association, the Hoteliers Associations, they are working with public health officials to determine what those best practices are. The final decision, though, is made by our public health director under consultation with the rest of the medical team in the county.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
I have one question, Greg. When this started back in March or so, it seemed like if most of the cases that we were hearing about were in the West Valley, and now it appears that the cases are actually, the new cases are starting to come up in the East Valley. Is that the trend? What do you attribute that to? Is it more testing or any thoughts to that?
It's a combination, Letty, and yes, we have recognized that. We also think that as, one, more testing, two, as this has become a bigger story, for lack of a better word, you know, again, remember that as far as Riverside County, we were ground zero here in Rancho Mirage with the first case in the county. So as those numbers started to grow, even in the West Valley, we've heard that people in the East Valley started taking this more seriously. Additionally, we there's a lot of wonder if a lot of this is because of the nature of work that a lot of residents of the East Valley do, whether that's the hospitality industry, you know, service industry, agriculture industry. And unfortunately, we haven't been able to extrapolate that kind of data because on the testing, we're really only asking age, gender, those. We haven't really even tracked ethnicity. We can track that on our public health website through the morgues based on the death certificate. But so we are we started the conversation with public health last week on how we can possibly extrapolate that data for where people work from the contact tracing that we've been doing within. And so they're working on trying to extrapolate some of that data. So it really is kind of a combination of a lot of things. And that's why we're really trying to focus, again, keeping the test site in Indio going. And as a lot of you are aware, we opened that up now to asymptomatic testing as a week ago Friday, which has really increased the numbers that have gone by too. That's why we're also encouraged about the partnership with the 29 Palms Band of Indians, the district, and Wells Borrego on that site that's going there. And then again, further efforts by Borrego Clinicas to test more in the East Valley.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Andrea, do we have any questions from, Vice President Borja?
Speaking of the tribes, do you know what the relationship is far as like opening the resorts and the casinos and everything else is to the county?
So the tribes, as you know, are sovereign and can choose when they want to do it. I will say though, our local tribes are really paying attention to what the direction of the county are. But to specifically answer how they are going to determine those decisions, I can't answer that, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay, Andrea, do we have any questions from the public?
Not from the public, but Director Rogers has a comment or question.
Okay, Director Rogers.
No, Greg answered all my questions, thank you.
Thank you.
And Director Zindo also has a question.
Okay. And there is a comment from the public.
Yes, I'll read that next, but I'll ask Dr. Zindo to ask his question.
I'll just add to what Greg just said. I think one of the reasons why the East Valley or the East Riverside County got it first is that there were some big events in January and February here in the valley, even though some other events later were canceled. And the other is we know that probably one of the first sites in the United States to develop it were in the Bay Area and Seattle, and a lot of Bay Area and Seattle people come to the Coachella Valley in the winter, and I think that's one reason why the Coachella Valley got hit first.
Great.
Very good. Okay, the question from Jeff Taylor is, can you share the plans for contact tracing? Will staff or volunteers be doing this?
So currently, we have been doing contact tracing from the very beginning, from when we first started testing. We just this week added another 15 individuals to that staff. I think we're up over 50 or 60 staff people within the county that are doing that contact tracing. We are also working with UCR Medical School, some other social workers within our DPSS department to actually bring in more people, because we do realize that that is key to not only stopping the spread, but again, that moves us further along in the governor's, not the phase in on the economic recovery, but the points he made last week about really the need for testing, and we hear this across the country, but really the need for testing, but more importantly, the contact tracing for that as well. So that process will continue. And as I said, we're beefing that up almost on a weekly basis with the county.
Andrea, do we have any other questions from the public?
I don't see any other questions in the chat or the Q&A. I think we're good.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to the next item, number 5, CEO.
Thank you, President Lara. The next item is the Regional Economic Protection Plan, which is another grant that we allocated to Lift the Rise to create an economic protection plan. And we have invited Heather Vicona to provide a brief overview of that. Heather is the president and CEO of Lift the Rise. And we have slides on the screen for Heather to walk us through her update.
Thank you. Thank you, Conrado. Am I off mute, Andrea?
Yes.
You are. We can hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll try to be really quick. I want to first give a quick update of where we are right now, what's happening next, and what this means in the long term. And I really just want to start by thanking both Conrado and the entire board of the Desert Healthcare District. It was just a little bit over a month ago that we collectively decided together that we needed to put in place really quickly a protection plan and support fund. And one of the things that really, really helped us at the start was relying on the existing infrastructure of partnership that Lift Rise has. But I really want to call out here and thank the Desert Healthcare District. When I first approached Conrado about the possibility of the healthcare district joining, we had a couple of contributions on the table. One was $50,000 and the other one was $25,000. And I said really quickly, if we're going to be able to magnetize and leverage these resources, we need to get to $250,000 quickly. So the Desert Healthcare District's early contribution and investment in this work really has had phenomenal and quick impact. Folks might know, and it might be on this front slide, or not, if not the next one, as of Friday, we had more than $1 million in commitments to the support fund. We've disbursed more than 1,100 payments to households representing more than 4,000 individuals, and we've taken in more than 4,300 applicants to the support fund and plan. This was really only possible because of the quick and early buy-in and belief and investment of folks like you all. One thing that's really notable that I want to call out too is that the resources that we've been able to put together, more than half of them come from public agencies, which I think is really significant if we think about the way that we've been able to align our work together. So a couple of things really quick. I'll talk about the data and then I'll talk a little bit about what we're seeing next. Also, I want to flag for anyone who's on the phone, we are sending out a weekly data update. If folks would like to receive that and they're not, please email us at info@lifttorise.org. So right now, as of the 24th, the average household size of intakes is 3.9, 45% are Spanish-speaking households. More than half of residents have an income of less than $20,000 a year, and nearly 40% of folks have children between the ages of 0 to 5. Another really notable indicator is that more than half of folks in the first 4 weeks identified that they would be unable to pay their rent next month. So this is what we're seeing is an incredibly high volume of demand. Another statistic that's not on here, but that's on the data report from last week, more than 97% of folks who have come through identify a loss of income, work, or wages because of COVID-19. The housing data that I talked about a little bit, about more than half of folks needing support, identifying that they're going to be unable to pay their rent, that really gets into one of the next phases of the Economic Protection Plan and Support Fund. We are working with multiple public agencies on the possibility, it's really a strong probability, we're just not in a place to talk about it yet, of deploying rental assistance through this platform. Oh, here's another, sorry, I didn't realize we had this slide as well. There's a lot of data here, there's a lot of other information that we can share as well. But one of the things I want to point out, and it's come up on this call in a couple of places, we have a $2 million goal together to be able to get to 10,000 households, to be able to get $200 of emergency relief to 10,000 households. Even that is woefully insufficient to reconcile for and solve for the tremendous burden that families are facing, the complete lack of disposable income. And when we get to rental assistance, even though we will likely disperse seven figures of rental assistance, it's woefully insufficient. It's not going to solve for the scale of the problem that residents in our region face. So in our existing Housing Collaborative Action Network and and Economic Opportunity Collaborative Action Network. Really, we are leaning on and working through the hard work that we've done together over the last couple of years and pushing forward both our policy and pipeline agenda. A thing that's underneath this, and I've talked with all of you about extensively in the past, is you know about our emerging housing capital fund. We're pivoting asks for that capital fund so that some investments we might be able to use for eviction protection. But what this really highlights even more is we really need to build more units of housing. We need that capital fund to pivot as a recovery effort. All the rental assistance in the world isn't going to solve for the huge deficit supply of affordable housing that we still have. But there's significant policy interventions and creative policy interventions that are going to have to be made to be able to support folks, especially as moratoriums and protections expire. So the long-term plays are really around digging deeper into the housing work, using the existing platforms that we have. And also, we're really leaning into a private-public partnership with the County of Riverside's workforce development on a significant workforce retraining intervention. But if I leave, there's a ton of information, and I'll pause for any questions folks might have. If I leave folks with anything, I just want to say that I think what we've seen together here is that when we work together, we can get to scale, we can get to a lot of households and a lot of support really quickly. And I'm incredibly grateful for both the leadership and support that Conrado and the board have provided to this work.
Thank you, Heather. I'm going to start with Director Matthews. Do you have any questions?
I don't, other than to compliment the good work that Lift the Rags has done.
Okay. Director Rogers?
No comments, but thank you, Heather, for good work.
Director Perez-Gill?
I have one question. For the, to be able to get the help, do you have to be a U.S. citizen?
No.
No?
No. And more than 20% of funds that have been dispersed so far have been dispersed to undocumented households. All of the funding that we've received, all of the funding period is able to be dispersed regardless of immigration status.
Okay, thank you.
Director Shore?
No, thank you.
Director Zendel?
No comments except thank you.
Vice President Borja?
Yes, I have two questions. My first one is around policy. Have you been working with cities that are creating policies for rent moratoriums? Rent is due for many on May 1st, which is at the end of this week. My city of Indio spoke about a moratorium at their last council meeting, but is not scheduled to meet this week to cast a vote for renters protection. So I'm just wondering if with this work and the policy work that you're talking about, are you also marrying it with the different moratoriums that other cities are considering or thinking about?
The quick answer is yes. I know that, I'm not sure if Greg is still on the line and wants it or is able at all to talk about potential developments at the county. But yes, we've joined into existing efforts of other organizations working on moratoriums and protections. We've participated locally at a city level, also at a state level. Our housing can, its next meeting on May 13th, will be specifically focusing on rental assistance and rental protections.
Thank you.
Okay, Andrea, do we have any questions?
I have a question.
The other question is around Social Security income. Like, there's people who are on SSI who can only receive a particular level of income before they're kicked off the program. Is this something that Lift to Rise, as you're like sharing these funds out with people, are you also like letting them know, hey, you will have to report this as earned income, like make sure that you check with the right workers, your social workers, to make sure that you're not going to pass your threshold and you can continue receiving the other benefits?
Yeah, again, the quick answer is yes. We have a team of legal aid lawyers, social workers, and working with folks at DPSS at the county as well to make sure that the funding level that's being dispersed doesn't interrupt or interfere with other folks' existing benefits. And also, Karen, I think this might be a place to flag, as the demand is incredibly huge and growing, one of the things that we are, one of the one of the ways that we're prioritizing the intakes is on obviously a loss of income due to COVID-19. Folks are prioritized that do not qualify for other forms of public assistance. The other third major priority is for undocumented residents.
Thank you so much. That not qualifying for other assistance is incredibly important in these times. There's definitely a lot of workers who make too much but not enough to survive this, who are still being asked to work at places like the golf courses, wherever else is opening, right, things like that. So thank you so much. Those priorities are really important. I know for people in my community, people in the East Valley who tend to be a lot of the times the worker bees, people in Desert Hot Springs. So thank you so much. My last question is, do you have an amount of how much you've given to date? I think my calculations were almost $250,000, but I may be wrong from the numbers you showed.
Yeah, I actually just texted to see. I think we're averaging, I think we're past averaging 200 payments a day. So yeah, we're as of Friday, we were at 1,135 payments. So that's times $200. And then today, I think we're at close to 1,400. And that's another thank you to you all for making your resources available really quickly. An issue you can imagine is getting funding in and getting it out quickly. But folks, the processing time, because of the volume of folks, has slowed down a little bit, but we've been able to move resources remarkably quickly. It's right now, I think we're at about 200 payments a day.
Thank you so much, Heather. And thank you to your team as well. I know they're putting in that time and the effort to get out not just the actual payments, but the word to our community. So I genuinely appreciate everything you guys are doing at this time.
Thank you.
And I will add the gratitude as well to all the other board members who have expressed that. Great job, Heather, and your team. And great job, Conrado, for working so well with this list of partners and for really helping as many people as we'll be able to help with teaming up together our resources. So great job, everyone. Okay, Andrea, do we have any questions from the public on this item?
Greg Rodriguez has a question or a comment.
Okay, Greg?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Just first of all, thanks to the healthcare district for being a partner in this. And Heather is absolutely amazing, my words, how quickly her and her team were able to create this program before any other individuals or jurisdictions across the country were even talking about this. Additionally, though, too, I wanted to emphasize, too, that, and she doesn't mention it, and she should, but is that all the administrative costs are being absorbed by Lift to Rise. So every dollar that is being raised for this fund is going directly into the hands of residents who need it. I wanted to address, and also I think, too, what this really highlights is just the effectiveness of what a partnership can do and what a collaborative effort does. You know, the public-private partnership and the work that Heather has done and her team and the board of Lift to Rise to really come to this point where to put this stuff in action is really beneficial to the community. Director Borja, just to address the eviction moratorium, I'm sure you're well aware we were approached weeks ago about a county eviction moratorium. So it's not a moratorium on rent per se, but it's an eviction moratorium. The governor has placed one in effect, and I know that there are concerns about some of the holes that are in that. Additionally, the Judicial Council had made a ruling a couple weeks ago that clarified a little bit of that. individual cities too have, unfortunately Indio hasn't, but other cities such as Cathedral City, Desert Hot Springs, Coachella and Palm Springs have implemented their own eviction moratoriums. I'm gonna be quite candid here in that we would have brought something to the Board of Supervisors weeks ago, but we did not have the votes to pass it. And we still don't believe we do that. That's just the political reality of that board. However, with that being said, we are moving forward with a resolution on Tuesday's board meeting to have the Housing Authority and our legal counsel come back with some recommendations. A lot of the recommendations that we have suggested they look at mirror those that have been done in Coachella and Palm Springs. Once we get that back, and then we'll see if we can move forward again with an actual ordinance. I want to keep point out though too that if the county does do anything, it would only apply to the unincorporated areas, but that of course covers a lot of the Eastern Valley, so we are working on that. I do want to say though to Director Borja and the other board members is that we really tried to do as much as we could on communicating about how we feel that renters are at least protected for now about not being kicked out. And we've actually provided templates on our website for residents, both in English and Spanish, on the requirement to notify landlords, as well as providing contact information for legal advice as well. Those are my comments.
Okay, Greg, I just wanna express my appreciation to Supervisor Perez for his leadership and also for facilitating a lot of the work that's going on between Lift to Rise and other partnerships, and also the information that we're getting from many of the county agencies, as Director Zendo expressed earlier, the information we're getting from our public health officer. So if you could express to him my gratitude for his leadership and the facilitation efforts.
Definitely will do. Thanks, Letty. Mm-hmm.
President DeLauro, I forgot one thing. Can I say it really quickly, or am I done?
Go ahead, quickly.
I just want to also say a huge thank you. There's more than 90 volunteers working in the text and phone bank, and that's partner organizations, medical students from USC Keck. There's about 20 of them, medical students from UCR School of Medicine, local organizations like the United Way of the Desert. Leadership Council has done a phenomenal job of really pushing for a stronger feedback loop to make sure that that there are not barriers or reducing barriers especially for undocumented residents. I blazed through that earlier, but really wanting to say that this is only possible because of all the folks that are putting effort and investment into the work. So a huge thank you to everyone.
Thank you for reminding us that this is actually Volunteer Appreciation Month. So we definitely want to recognize our volunteers. So thank you. Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Next item, CEO.
Thank you, President DeLauro. The next item is an update on the RAP Foundation Collaborative Fund. This is a fund that between the Desert Healthcare District and the RAP Foundation.
Can I interrupt you there? Jeff, do I have to step out, or since this is only information, can I stay?
Repeat that again, Jeff.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Yeah, no, you can stay. It's okay. Just information.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a written report on pages 61 and 62 of this packet. But we also have Donna Craig, our Chief Program Officer, to provide a brief verbal update on that.
Okay, so as you know, the board had approved $100,000 to match RAP's $100,000. So we had a collective fund of $200,000. And our first round, we allocated over $115,000. So there's $85,000 left. So we met and discussed and with Conrado's input as well, decided to open it back up. And so we did. We had a closed, people could apply. The cutoff yesterday, the deadline was to close of business yesterday. And we had up to 85,000 that's left. We have 29 new applicants that have come in.
Wow.
And they're from all over the place. Idlewild, Temecula, a lot here. So RAP staff and board president, board chair Craig Borba, and our staff, our grants team, are going to be virtually meeting tomorrow at 1 o'clock to go over all of the applications and decide who should be eligible for the funding.
Thank you. Questions from our board members. Director Matthews.
Are you off?
I think we may have lost him. I don't see him.
No, he has no questions. He's saying no. Okay.
Yeah, Director, I have Rogers. No questions. I just don't know how to unmute.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Director Rogers.
Yes, I just wanted to know if the new round of funding is going to go through the program committee.
No, just like the first round.
Because it's already been approved.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Director Perez-Gill.
I have no comments at this time.
Okay. Director Shore.
Oh, thank you.
Director Zindel.
I had a little OCD episode this morning, and I decided to go through the minutes and figure out how much money has been allocated for COVID-19 from the healthcare district. And it's $1.656 million. And I think that's quite an accomplishment. And I want to congratulate the board on actually the CEO and the staff who've done most of the work, by the way. On that, I think it's really what we're here for. So thank you.
Very good. Vice President Borja.
Similar to my earlier comments, right, I would appreciate strong considerations as well for those that are helping people stay in their homes and those that are advocating for worker safety in our community. Those two things, personally, like we've heard, are part of public health. What people go to work and catch, they come home and hopefully not share with their loved ones, but there are those high risk around the coronavirus. Just
most
that.
Most definitely. We do have some requests that have come in that are addressing that.
Cool, thank you.
And I just wanna add my comments that on behalf of, I'm wearing my other hat, on behalf of the Rapp Foundation, we really appreciate the work that the healthcare district has done. Donna, for just really utilizing your platform for making this happen so quickly and so easily. So thank you, Donna, and thank you, Conrado, for making this happen.
Well, I wanna thank the rest of our team as well, especially Erica, because she's, even though she's new to the district, she's picked up this black belt grant making very, very fast. Mm-hmm. And Alejandro stepped in to help as well as Megan. So it's really, you know, it was a team effort.
Way to go, team. Okay, do we have any questions from the public, Andrea?
No, we do not.
Okay, very good. We'll move on to the next item. CEO.
Thank you, President Lara. The next item is the procurement of personal protective equipment. Although we have an allocation of $30,000, it has been easier to find some items that will be donated to the district than purchasing, because it has become very challenging to find medical suppliers that have any availability of PPE that we can buy for our district. I do want to mention that we were approved to receive 2,100 face shields that are being made by a local 3D printer in the Bay Area through a grant that they've received from the Nike brand. So we will be receiving those over the next few weeks. They will come in shipments of 150 face shields at a time. And also today we received the approval from the Panda Express, which is going to donate 10,000 N95 respirators and 10,000 surgical masks. So we will be receiving those soon.
That's great work. I love the fact that we're getting the attention of organizations outside the Valley. That it demonstrates that that people are hearing about and it facilitates the donation. So great work. And I will ask Director Matthews, do you have any questions?
I do not, sorry.
Director Rogers.
No questions, thank you.
Director Perez-Gill?
I have no questions, thank you.
Director Shore?
Well, I just have a comment that the reality of providing the equipment through more classical sources has, in a sense, relieved us of a burden. So notwithstanding that Conrado has the residual and the reserve to do it, the fact of the matter is, it appears to me that the equipment issues are stabilizing and unfortunately replaced by other higher priorities. So it's good that we passed this motion, and it's good that we're not having any necessity to use these funds. Thank you.
Director Zendel.
No comment.
Okay, and Vice President Borja?
None at this time, thank you.
Andrea, do we have any comments from the public?
We do not.
Okay, very good. Next item, CEO.
Thank you. Another item that was approved by the board was a $50,000 contract, which we extended to CV Strategies to create a resource center. That is a website or web-based resource center that the district has on its website. And we have been providing accurate information and guidance to the public on COVID-19 related issues. We have been providing this in both English and Spanish, and we're actually currently working on creating some resources in Purépecha for the farm workers communities that are native to some parts of Mexico where the language that they speak is Purépecha. And because the challenge with that community is accessing internet and accessing our website, we're planning on doing some outreach through Find Food Bank to make those items available to that community. We have had, since the launching of our resource center, over nearly 1,000 hits on our website, and we have been creating videos in English and Spanish, which are available on our website. And the staff has also been participating in TV and radio news segments, making sure that we're making the public aware of the work that the district is doing and that these resources are available to our community.
Thank you. I'll start with Director Matthews.
I'm good.
Okay. Director Rogers?
No questions.
Director Perez-Gill?
No questions. Thank you.
Director Shore?
No, thank you.
Director Zendel?
No questions.
Vice President Borja?
No questions. Just thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, I also thank you, Conrado, and the rest of the team as well.
Thank you.
Next item, CEO.
The next item is related to community donations of medical and non-medical supplies and equipment. We have, as you know, opened a receival center at our office, and we have been receiving a few items, including a donation of $500 in cash. Other items that have been donated include N95 masks, gloves, CPAP machines, oxygen, disposable plates, cups, forks, spoons, razors, shampoo, toothbrushes, things like that. The reality is that we're not receiving as much as we need, but we continue to accept those donations, and we're also giving every person that is making a donation at foundation tax letter via email so that they can also use to at the time that they will be filing their income taxes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much. I'll turn it over to the board for questions or comments. Director Matthews.
No, I have none. Thank you. Okay.
Director Rogers.
No questions. Thank you.
Director Perez-Gill.
No questions. Thank you.
Director Shore.
No, thank you.
Director Zendel.
No, thanks.
Vice President Borja.
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Conrado, for all of the informational items.
Thank you.
Turn it over to our legal for legal comments and report, Jeff.
Hi, everybody. I'm glad and happy and grateful that everybody seems to be healthy and doing fine. Looks like we're going to be teleconferencing for the foreseeable future. So I don't think we're going to stop doing this for a while. My report's in the board packet. Basically, my understanding is that the legislature is going to try to target next Monday, May 4th, is the return date. And basically, the priority, obviously, is going to be COVID-19. And the legislature has been directed, basically, to limit their bills to 5, with the emphasis on COVID-19 crisis. And so this should be kind of interesting. I think the workload, again, will be very little new spending on the budget. And it's going to be focused on COVID-19. And there may be some, summertime budgets. They don't anticipate to get, the tax revenues are certainly going to be down this year. So it should be interesting. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm having a lot of bad hair days. And I feel like I'm getting back to the 70s when my hair was much. But with that, I'll turn it back to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Matthews, do you have any questions or comments?
I don't. I've been having no hair days.
Director Rogers?
No questions.
Director Perez-Gill?
No questions.
Director Shore?
My wife made me shave off my mustache. I do have a question. Jeff, the most recent federal missive was a recommendation to open schools. Now, it's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but school authority is a local decision and not a statewide governmental decision. And with that as the foundation, what, if anything, can you comment on school reopening and the potentials for that?
Well, I think if you listen to the governor's his daily press report today, I think he was pretty clear that they're gonna be looking at maybe the summer for recommendations to start to open up some type of schooling. But I think from a legal standpoint, I think it's really going to be up to the governor, even though it is in conjunction with consultation with the local officials. But I don't think I think the governor has the ultimate power with respect to the school systems.
Not the school boards.
Not the school boards.
Thank you.
Okay. Director Zendel.
No questions right now.
Okay. Vice President Borja.
No? No questions.
Very good. Okay, we will move on to our immediate issues and comments. I will ask each board member. Oh, first of all, no, the other one doesn't have public comments. So I'll ask board members if you have any immediate issues and comments to share at this time, starting with Director Matthews.
No, thank you.
Okay. Director Rogers?
None, thank you.
Director Perez-Gill?
No, thank you.
Director Shore? Director Shore? No? Okay. Director Zendel?
I wanted to ask staff and make a comment about, I hope we're going to start thinking about getting back to our committee work. And I know budget is being done, but I think the Zoom meeting works very well once we get the technology down. And I would hope that the committees begin to meet again so that we don't become 100% COVID-19 focused. Just a comment.
Vice President Borja?
No comment.
Okay. And I'll just add that I agree, Director Zendel. The CEO and I have talked about the fact that as we start thinking about our budget, that we really need to have some input from the board members on funding priorities since we had to postpone our strategic planning efforts. So I think we've talked about having
study session.
Study session. A Zoom study session that we will have to plan so that we can get input from our board members and be able to help staff put together some ideas to bring forward for board consideration. Okay, so thank you. Okay, and adjournment at 6:03. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, second? By Director Borja, second. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Very good. Passes. Any no's? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, we are going to move right into our foundation meeting. Okay. Okay, at 6:03, call the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Director Shore. He's having problems with his volume. You are unmuted, Dr. Shore. Director Shore, can you hear me?
Present, excuse me, I'm present.
Director Zindel?
Here.
Director Perez-Gill?
Here.
Director Rogers?
Here.
Director Matthews?
Here.
Vice President Borja?
Here.
And President DeLara?
Here. Okay, is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So
I made the motion.
Second.
Okay, Director Perez-Gill makes a motion. Director Matthews, second. I'll call for the vote. Director Matthews?
Yes. Aye.
Director Rogers?
Aye.
Director Perez-Gill?
Yes.
Director Shore?
Aye.
Director Zindel?
Yes.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Okay. Public comment. Do we have any public comments, Andrea?
No, we do not. There are no hands raised.
Okay, very good. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
I had a change in the minutes of the meeting, which is part of the agenda.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second for discussion?
I'll second it.
Okay, Director Matthews seconded. Director Rogers, can you share what your changes are?
Yes, on page 6, the Homeless Initiative, it says the motion was made by Vice President Rogers, and I think it should say Director Rogers.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Director Rogers. Okay, I'll call for the vote with that change. Director Matthews?
Aye.
Director Rogers?
Aye.
Director Perez-Gill?
Yes.
Director Shore?
Aye.
Director Zindel?
Aye.
Vice President Borja?
Yes.
And I vote yes. Okay, moving on to the next item. I can't see what the next item is, so.
CEO?
Oh, CEO report?
Can you see it on the, can you see the agenda on the screen also?
Now I can. Yes, now you went up. Okay, so we have the CEO report. I'll turn it over to our CEO.
Thank you, President DeLara. The item that was not approved on the district side related to COVID-19 emergency funding was related to homelessness and supporting the homeless services community. So we allocated $75,000, $25,000 to Coachella Valley Rescue Mission, $25,000 to the Galilee Center, and $25,000 to Martha's Village. These are, again, corporation support. So those grants have been provided to the three organizations. They all have received their payments. There will be other items
related. Can I add, it's Les Zindel. I wanted to order something to pick up.
To homelessness, can you order me a sandwich, please? So we're going to have more updates on activities related to homelessness by Greg Rodriguez, which is going to be the next item on the agenda.
Okay, Okay, very good. I'm going to turn it over to the board members if they have any questions at this point. Director Matthews.
I do not, thank you.
Director Rogers.
No, thank you.
Director Perez-Gill.
No, thank you.
Director Shore.
Well, I just want, Conrado, if you wouldn't mind reacting to the issue of the impact of the COVID issues on the issue of homelessness, now that this hot season is either upon us or right around the corner. How does the A affect B, so to speak, and what, if any, additional contingencies do we and our supporter, our caregivers, our service providers have to do in this respect, all things equal, given that this is not a usual year?
This is an unprecedented challenge, and it's having an impact on everything that happens in our daily lives. The homelessness community is impacted because they don't have the space that we have in our homes to be distancing from other people. They live in congregated sites, and the staff that is serving them is also impacted by being overly exposed to a population that is considered of high risk. So we're looking closely at what are going to be the needs of the homeless services organizations, and what can be the role of the district moving forward. And I think at the study session that President De Lara mentioned earlier, we will be having an in-depth discussion of how we're going to be allocating funds for the next fiscal year, which is going to start in just 60 days, and what is the role of the district, how we can support that. We're also going to have a discussion in the program committee about making recommendations for supporting the cooling centers. The heat is already here. I think the fact that the city of Palm Springs was able to open the gym at the Palm Springs High School, which is climate control and they have better conditions there, it's helping us, but that is going to expire as soon as the physical distancing or the shelter in place requirements are going to be lifted. So we are going to have those conversations in the upcoming days, and we will be back to the board with some recommendations.
Thank you.
Director Zendel?
What was the question?
Do you have any questions on the first item, COVID-19 update and homelessness community?
No.
Okay. Vice President Borja?
No, I do appreciate the written update from all three of the grantees. It's like pretty thorough and tells us what we need to know. Thank you.
Okay, I just have a comment. I think we've all read about the economic impact that the COVID-19 is having on our cities. And I would like to hope that despite the budget issues that many of the cities are facing, that they will their contributions to our homelessness providers because that's very important, and we do not want to have problems because of lack of funding. Hopefully that's something that we can, that will continue despite the economic issues they're facing. Okay, that was my only comment. The next item. Do we have any comments from the
Zendel has his hand raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind, as we're talking about this, that we really should be working this issue through CVAG's homelessness task force and not on our own. We've created this structure, and I know that there are challenges with COVID-19, but it has to be Coachella Valley wide. And it has to be coordinated. And I know you all know that, but I hope we keep that in mind.
Thank you, Director Zendel. Okay, Andrea, do we have any other comments from the public?
We do not at this time.
Okay, very good. We will move on to the next item, homelessness initiative. First item, CEO.
Thank you, President Delara. We invited Greg Rodriguez to provide some information about these two items.
Okay, Greg?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm sorry, Conrado, I don't know if you gave the written thing I sent out or...
Yes, it is. It's part of the packet.
So I won't go too in-depth, but for those on the phone, I'd like them to know as well. really, about the week that this all started, when we first got our case, one of the first concerns we had as a county, especially out of our office and the collaborative at CVAG, was the effect it was going to have on the homelessness committee to... Conrado's point about the difficulty in social distancing. So I convened a call with all of our service providers, members of the district were on the call as well as some county officials, and really put in place and educated the providers on some best practices that were sent out not only by the CDC, but by the state public health department and our county department. All of the providers, Martha's particularly is in a really good spot because they have individual rooms. So, you know, social distancing is much easier at that facility. CVRM, a little bit more difficulty, but they have not allowed as much day use. So it's strictly for their clients that are within their programs right now, even though they still are doing the feeding initiatives and then practicing in their nighttime shelter as much social distancing as possible. The staff have been utilizing the amount of PPEs that have been available. That's getting much better than it was in the very beginning. And then the other service providers primarily, of course, really kind of cut down their activity with the public per se. They were still providing services such like Jewish Family Services. Path of Life is still placing people in housing as well. We did about three or four of those calls. We haven't had one in about a week and a half or 2 weeks. We'll probably do an update this Friday, but so far so good. I will say in the county, we are lucky, knock on wood. We have not had a case of COVID-19 amongst any of our homeless populations, either in shelters or in encampments. We have done a couple outreach to encampments, primarily in the River Bottom and Riverside. And ironically, a lot of the homeless individuals do not want people coming into their encampments because they're afraid of getting infected by the outdoor population. However, with that being said, some of those individuals have been housed as well. As far as the Palm Springs shelter, as Conrado said, I was able to help secure the high school. So we are housing overnight about 50 of those individuals. And properly socially distanced, tons of donations and food, so everybody's being fed. Really good hygiene going on at that facility with showers, hand sanitizing, and again, the social distancing. Conrado made a great point, though, that the minute that the governor lifts his order, we will have to vacate the high school and probably return to the Palm Springs Boxing Club. Also want to talk a little bit about CVAG has expanded our crisis stabilization units that we traditionally contract through Path of Life. As some of you are aware, we increased that contract from 12 units to 24. So Path of Life is rapidly trying to locate units and up those. But what we came up with, and I give a lot of credit to Tom Cox from CVAG on this and Libby Carlson, is utilizing some of the vacant hotel motel space that we have in the Valley. Not only does it allow us to provide additional crisis stabilization units, but actually provides a little bit of income to those facilities as well. Additionally, we continue to operate the Access Center out of the Boxing Club during the day, and that is being run by our Path of Life staff and our getting people enrolled into services and into housing. The county, as is in the document too, has implemented a hotel motel voucher program. As many of you know, the governor unveiled his Project Safe Key about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. The county of Riverside was actually on top of this about a month and a half, almost 2 months ago in implementing this program. To date, there's about 345 individuals that have been placed across the county, a little bit over 100 within the Coachella Valley. The important thing here is we're not just putting them there and leaving them there, they're getting full wraparound services, food service, And additionally, we are creating exit plans for all of those individuals to hopefully secure permanent housing. Nice thing about the requirements, even though we had to put some requirements of age or extreme medical conditions, is that since most of them are over 65, we have some access to senior vouchers that'll help with a lot of that placement. I want to address a couple things that came up in comments on the item just a moment ago on the cooling centers. Conrado and I have already started discussions on this about re-implementing the program that we did last year. Just for your information, the regular county daytime cooling centers traditionally open on June 1st, but as we know, because we're in this COVID period, as well as the heat seems to have come a lot sooner than usual, the county is working on a plan to see about utilizing or opening those a little bit sooner. The difficulty, of course, is many of them operate out of senior centers that are closed. They operate with volunteer staff that may not be comfortable in doing that, so we're working out some details on that. And further, on the summertime cooling center overnight ones, I've already been able to secure location in Desert Hot Springs again. We would obviously use the Palm Springs Boxing Club, and then Mark Carnevale from the city of Cathedral City is working on a location for that. So hopefully, again, like last year, we can keep the capital costs to a minimum on that. On the city money to CVAG, Letty, thanks for bringing that up, or city money to homeless services at all. We have heard no city make any claims that they are going to reduce that funding. In fact, Desert Hot Springs had brought that up on a council meeting about a month ago about possibly reallocating their already dedicated line item. I'd like to think it was from my public testimony, but I think it was the will of the council overall that money is protected. And we are hearing the same things from the city. And I know you'll be discussing possible match funding at your study session as well. And then to Les's point on the coordinating with the collaborative, I want to assure you, Les, that Conrado and I speak regularly, and he is coordinating any efforts and any initiatives that the district does that definitely complement the collaborative nature through the CVAG effort. We are, as you said, COVID-19 has put a little bit of brakes on the actual formal formation of the collaborative. However, we are moving forward with that. We had one subcommittee, and then we're holding another one in a couple weeks that'll finalize one of the recommendations that we will bring to the Homelessness Committee and then also to the Executive Committee for approval. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Greg. I'm going to turn it over to board members, starting with board member Matthews.
No, I just again want to compliment the work the county's doing, and you, Greg, really appreciate your implementing this project well.
Thank you.
Director Rogers.
Yes, thank you. I know that it's difficult to have social service programs being administered like the Room Key program. And I know, is it just the county that is providing hotel motel rooms for the homeless, and it's the number is 100? I know, you know, just looking at the line at the food bank today, the homeless people lined up. They don't have cars, so they had to stand in line. There's a lot of homeless people out there, and I'm wondering who's coordinating getting rooms for them. That's my first question. Second question is the boxing club. I know that Path of Life has their offices there. And I've heard a complaint that the Path of Life is moving their desks in and it's moving out beds. CVRM is turning away people because there's no room at the high school occasionally. And, you know, I'm wondering what is the future of the boxing club? It's really too small to be an overnight shelter. That's my two questions. Thank you.
Greg, can you address those two questions?
Absolutely. So on the hotel motel voucher program that is being run by the county, as I mentioned, the county overall has secured about 3,000 rooms. As I said, we countywide housed about 340 people, 100 in the valley here. Like any time we do outreach or any time we offer services, whether that's shelter services, house placement, not everybody takes advantage of it. And so we have done amazing job of outreach, whether that's through our behavioral health teams, our DPSS teams, through our nonprofit providers, such as Path of Life in our area here. And so we are housing as many as we possibly can that will take that. Additionally, due to FEMA reimbursement requirements on this program, is there had to be restrictions on age and medical necessity. As far as the boxing club goes, yes, Path of Life is using that during the day, as I said. They're not turning it into an office. The beds were removed, yes, because all of those were transferred to the high school. So there's no effect on the actual overnight operations. And once again, this is disinformation on CVRM turning people away. They are not turning people away. Unfortunately, one of our other service providers keeps these rumors going, and it's extremely frustrating, not only for those of us trying to provide services, but for the reputation of CVRM. So no one is actually turned away from that facility. The future of the boxing club, as I said, if we go to a nighttime cooling center again there, it is cramped. We were able to provide the service to everyone that wanted it last summer. No one was turned away again there. This brings up the bigger discussion of the utilization of the Palm Springs HAP allocation of $10 million that they're still waiting to get the funds from, and what are the long-term goals in creating more shelter, navigation center, whatever word you want to call it, space availability.
Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
Okay, Director Rogers, are we okay to move forward?
Yes, thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
Okay, Director Perez-Gill.
I don't have any questions. I just want to thank them for their services.
Thank you. Director Shore.
Thank you, no.
Okay. Director Zendel.
Yes, I just wanted to comment that when you say, fortunately, no homeless person that you know of has come down with COVID-19, unless it means no one's gotten sick and died from it, as far as you know. But if you're not testing, you don't know what you don't know. And I think that homeless is a group, along with some other high-risk groups, that outreach and testing ought to be done. And I think you'll find, not only will you probably find infected people, but it's also one more way that people can interact with homeless people and talk to them about other things and that might affect their health. So I would encourage the county to really do outreach testing.
Yeah, Les, and thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that. And I do agree. And as I said, we were looking at ways to expand that testing in the farm worker community. Those conversations are being had in the homeless community as well. I also want to say the county, when we first started getting issues around our skilled nursing facilities, overnight implemented what we call our skilled nursing facility outreach service teams, and they'll call them our SOS teams. That have visited all, not only the skilled nursing facilities, but other long-term care facilities over the last couple weeks to provide training to their staff, as well as PPEs, and then testing as well. Additionally, those teams, as of today, started going to all the homeless shelters. I will say, Les, and I appreciate, you know, as you are aware, the availability of the test in the beginning, the ability for our staff to go out and test has been somewhat limited, and especially really focusing more on the drive-up testing. With that being said, though, from the very beginning, a lot of those best practices protocol were checking for symptoms and identifying if anybody needed to be tested. But Les, I think you know, I'm of the mindset, I would be willing, I'm ready to test as many possible people as we can, especially those high-risk populations.
And I'll just add that as long as we're testing so many asymptomatic people that really have very, very little risk of having active COVID-19, mm-hmm. It means we're taking resources away from the high-risk groups. And I know so many people that are going to India or whatever, they think they're going to get a test to show them whether they ever had COVID-19.
Right.
Because there's so much misinformation out there.
Right.
And then when they're told, well, you don't have it now, they find they're disappointed that they didn't get the antibody test. So there needs to be better information, and maybe the resources can be moved from the asymptomatic to the asymptomatic no risk to the asymptomatic at risk.
Good point.
Thank you. Vice President Borja?
No question, I guess a comment. You've shared a lot of very good practices so far that the county is doing to take care of people experiencing homelessness. Just asking you to consider, once all of this is whatever, over, moved on, lighter, just requesting that the county continue to provide this great high level quality of service in these similar ways to people experiencing homelessness.
So Karen, I'm so glad you said that, because you know, those of us that have been doing this for a while, both locally and countywide, feel the same way. And as you are well aware, the challenge is resources. This hotel motel voucher program with case management and housing placement, extremely expensive, as you can imagine. We're lucky in that we're getting FEMA and state reimbursements for this program. However, with that being said, and it will be interesting to analyze the data once this is done, especially on the permanent placement from this program, is this is proving to be an effective means of getting people into housing. And you know, to Carol's point, no, not everybody's taking advantage, but a good number of people are. And so we are having those discussions about moving forward, is how do we turn this into a permanent program?
Mm-hmm. When you analyze the data, is that something that we can request to see?
Absolutely.
As you're analyzing it, is it something that you can share with HARC to support, and they may or may not want to, I'm speaking out of turn, but to support our community health assessment?
You're not speaking out of turn, Karen. You know I always want all the data.
Dina loves data. We know that. So, yes, Karen. And again, is you know, we're in the throes of this all right now, so we're just trying to do the programming, but we are keeping track of all this, so that data analyzation hasn't begun. But we most definitely will probably utilize the, whether it's Jenna or UCR or whatever it may be. And yes, we will share that, definitely. Because it is a best practices thing, and we want, you know, other providers and the community as a whole, obviously, to hopefully see that this was successful, so they continue their resource investments from our cities and districts such as yours.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for all your comments, and thank you, Greg, for keeping us abreast of everything that is going on. I appreciate it.
Welcome.
Okay, the next item, number two, CEO.
Thank you, President Lara. The next item is going to be the Behavioral Health Initiative.
Oh, okay. So the Riverside County and CVAG Summer Cooling Center, it said possible action. Did we skip that, or
Yes, we will be presenting that information at the program committee.
Okay, so, oh. Jeff, oh, I thought Jeff was trying to get our attention, but I think he's talking to somebody else. Okay, so then we're moving on then to going to Behavioral Health Initiative, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Go ahead.
On the Behavioral Health Initiative, I want to report that we finally have a program officer for that position, a senior program officer. Her name is Ify Mordi. She's a master's in public health, currently working with the Association of State and Territorial Health Directors out of Arlington, Virginia. She's someone with a lot of experience on health equity. She's actually been working with the Association of State and Territorial Health Directors for about 10 years, and where she, among other things, she developed a national toolkit in response to the opioid crisis, which has been used to provide training to public health professionals in 24 high-risk jurisdictions here in the state of California. So I believe that she's going to be a wonderful asset in that position, and she will be relocated to the district beginning her position in July.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Do we have any questions from Director Matthews?
No, I don't. Other than Jeff Scott's got some cute grandchildren.
Yes, he does. Director Rogers, any questions or comments?
No, thank you. It's happy to see we're moving on.
Director Perez-Gill?
No comments, thank you.
Director Shore?
Thank you. No comment.
Director Zendo?
No comment.
Okay. Vice President Borja?
No comment.
And I'm just going to comment on the fact that you're bringing her on board in July. You're just going to really let her enjoy the whole summer, huh? That's good.
Yes.
Okay, so moving on.
Playing it forward.
Very good. The next item, Coachella Valley Health Information Place, CVHIP. CEO, please.
Thank you, President Lara. We have the two of our staff members, Will and Alejandro, who can provide a brief update on the CVHIP marketing campaign. Will?
Very happy to report. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I'm happy to report that the campaign has launched. Which is great news. It means more people in the community are learning about this resource. The digital ads, which are the ads that appear on the websites of KSQ and Telemundo, they were launched on April 15th. And just last week, our radio ad in Spanish on La Poderosa was launched on Thursday. This week, I am reviewing with Alejandro the TV spots in English and Spanish. And once those are approved, they'll begin appearing the end of this week or early next week. And I just wanna say, wanna thank Vice President Borja for her suggestion that we reach out to smaller platforms. I have actually reached out and talked with six different platforms, YouTube channels, websites, and there's a lot of interest in helping us to market CVHIP. I will be following up with them this week.
Very good. And Alejandro, then, do you have something to contribute?
Yeah, definitely. Hi, everybody. Yeah, just on the COVID-19 responses, you know, we at the Connect.ie/CVHIP collaborative have been working on a couple of things, you know, since a lot of our community partners are working primarily through a digital platform, what better way to kind of disseminate information about COVID-19 you know, programs and resources then through CVHIP. You know, we added some of the great resources that CV Strategies put on our new landing page. We were able to extract some, a portion of that and put it directly on our CVHIP landing page. And we also added some COVID-19, you know, tags to the taxonomy. So when individuals are actually doing searches for COVID-19 resources here in the Coachella Valley, the search engine is gonna pick up, you know, the tag COVID-19, COVID-19 control or testing, and display some of those search results first before they actually present any other resources that might meet the criteria of that particular individual. We were also able to add a COVID-19 response program tag to apply to current programs and resources that are still operating. We know that some of our community partners have closed, you know, their operations, and some of them have modified them to provide like telehealth resources. So we were able to identify, and that's part of the ongoing work that I'm doing, is to identify those programs and add that COVID-19 response program tag to that. So the community member that is searching for resources is able to identify right off the bat that this organization is still providing services at this time by just simply looking at that tag. And then the last point is that IHV noticed that a lot of our community partners were starting to work remotely. A lot of their staff, a lot of the social workers, you know, case managers. So they put forth a $15,000 grant for each region, the greater Riverside area, San Bernardino area, and the Coachella Valley. So we were able to secure a $15,000 grant to provide technical support to some of our community partners that are working remotely from, you know, from home or other locations, or sometimes in the field. So we were able to get those resources out to organizations that needed assistance, possibly purchasing, you know, laptops or iPads for their staff to be able to utilize, you know, while they're working at home or on the field, to continue to connect community members, you know, through CVHEP. And another thing that we did, we were able to give a presentation to Lift to Rise and their staff. And we believe that also their volunteers are utilizing the CVHEP platform to connect a lot of the families that have applied and have received some of that financial assistance program through their, you know, through their program that they established in conjunction with us.
Very good. Thank you. CEO, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's...
Very good. Okay, I'll start with Director Matthews for questions or comments.
I have none. Thank you.
Director Rogers?
No, I have no comments. Good job.
Director Perez-Gill?
No, I have no comments. Thank you.
Director Shore?
None. Thank you.
Director Zendel?
No comments or questions.
Okay, and Vice President Borja?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments. I appreciate that the website has been updated, so it's not tone deaf after like the COVID-19 crisis. I just went on it and it's great. You have all the resources up front and center, so I appreciate the changes that you've made quickly to make sure that people have access to what they need right away. I am also very thankful that you're helping our partners get technology. One of the biggest issues that we've heard from our school districts and our teachers is the digital divide between people who have laptops, computers, cell phone access, and internet access, and those who don't, being able to just not even get resources but complete their work from home and things of that nature. So I think it was very just intelligent for us to use that money in that way. So thank you for that. The last sort of comment that this sort of brings up for me is around the census. So far, roughly 44% of people in Congressional District 36, which is our congressional district, it encompasses quite a bit of people in our community, have completed their census form. And so as you're talking about this understanding, right, that people can complete their census form online, it's been extended until October 31st. But eventually the resources that will come to support the COVID-19 crisis, like post-crisis in our communities, a lot of that federal aid will be distributed based off of like census numbers. So I'm also just, as you continue your work and as the district continues pushing out sort of digital access to communities, keeping in mind those who don't have internet access, keeping in mind that there's more work for us to possibly contribute and partner with others, that includes the census.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice President Borja. Okay, Andrea, do we have any questions from the public?
We do not, they're dwindling down slowly.
Okay, we are going to adjourn. Sorry?
May I?
No, I just thought we started with 30 public participants and now we have 13 left.
Okay, very good, yeah. Conrado.
May I add something?
Yes.
So we have had a wonderful meeting today and we have been able to share with all you board members and the public everything that we're doing here in response to COVID-19. And I want to acknowledge the leadership of the board because your guidance and your support has made possible all this funding that we have made available to our community. But I also want to thank the staff that it's working so hard to make sure that these funds are deployed easily and that we're providing all the support to our community partners that they need. The staff has been doing a wonderful job. They have been working nonstop on everything that we have received your direction to do. And finally, I want to acknowledge the work of our partners because they too are doing a marvelous job in putting resources into our communities. We continue to work and explore opportunities in which we can continue to do good work in Coachella Valley. And we will be bringing those opportunities to you in the future days. So thank you again for that. I feel really proud of all the work that we are doing on behalf of the district. Thank you.
Thank you. Very well said. at we will adjourn at 6:42. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, Director Perez-Gill made the motion. Director Rogers seconded. Director Matthews.
Aye.
Director Rogers.
Aye.
Director Perez-Gill.
Yes.
Director Shore.
Aye.
Director Zendel.
Aye.
Vice President Borja.
Yes.
Very well done. Good evening, everybody. Go and let's go pick up your order.
I thought it was muted.
Good evening.
Muted?
No.
Thank you.